It's Scott Mulcahy, your host for Love What You Play online events and podcasts. I'm super excited to have the opportunity to talk to Jen Starkey, the founder of MVP Leadership Academy, owner of Fast Pitch Fit, who now has over 30,000 followers on Facebook. She's a speaker and coach for self-leadership for girls, and we'll be touching base on some of the new initiatives that she is getting involved with. I'm really looking forward to our chat. Thanks for joining us, Jen.
I'm pumped.
Schedule this.
I'm excited. Yeah, let's do it.
Let's get at her. So I ask everybody this first question for mainly to set the tone for the latter part of the talk. Where did you grow up and what did you play as a kid?
I grew up in North Texas and I played softball growing up. And that's basically all I played. I wanted to play football in middle school, but my dad was scared I was going to get hurt. So did a little bit of tennis here and there, but just softball all the way up through college.
So that was the organized. What about unorganized? Free play? Anything?
I played street hockey with my neighbors on the street. I remember in elementary school, I tried to play soccer. That was not my jam. I did not love that. You know, we played at recess and stuff back when that was a thing in the States, and got to bounce the ball around. I played a lot of wall ball. That was my favorite growing up, playing wall ball, that kind of stuff. And now I do jiu-jitsu, which I love. I'm crazy about it.
Yeah, and when did that start? Because I remember, was it 2 or 3 years ago, we did the mastermind, and AJ was, did she entice you and say, hey, you got to try this? Is that how it kind of evolved?
Yeah, so my coach, my Brazilian jiu-jitsu coach, I actually knew her through business, and about a year and a half ago, I was setting some new goals in my life, making some big changes, big moves. And I told her, I said, I want to start jiu-jitsu and I want to compete in 30 days. So she said, come move in. So I moved in with her. We started training, did my first competition in 30 days. It's getting close to 2 years. And I love it. And it's something that I see as part of my life for as long as I can see in the future.
It's great. I mean, I wish I had the knees that could handle something like that at this point, but kudos to you for taking that on. One of the people I interviewed last event was Amy Saltzman. She's into mindfulness, and she just took up snowboarding. And I think she said, yeah, I was 43 when I decided to start it, and she loves that. So, you know, it's never too late to try something, right?
Absolutely. It's changed my life. And I know when I first started, I was not healthy and I was speaking with athletes. I tell this story sometimes. I was like, I was teaching about mental performance and I was talking about the importance of who you surround yourself with and setting goals. And I was speaking at the Calgary Olympic Institute, actually up there. And I looked at myself in the mirror and I was like, oh my gosh, like, I'm not living this anymore. I'm talking about it, but I'm not doing it. And I realized that if I just kept showing up preaching but not living, there was always going to be a disconnect. So that's why I decided to do it, and I'm so glad I did, because it's changed everything in my life, given me new relationships, it's changed my mind, changed my body. I'm a completely different person than I was a year and a half ago because I decided to start playing again.
Yeah, and that's the key. We have to make time to, even myself, I'm go all the time, but you have to make that time to take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And take care of others. I mean, that's really the biggest challenge we all face in the space, right? So
yeah,
maybe a little bit of background in terms of where you started, and then we'll do the deep dive on where you're going. So MVP Leadership Academy, what's that all about?
Yeah, so I started Fast Pitch Fit. It was just a Facebook page where I could get out and help the softball market about probably like 10 years ago now. And really just listening to the challenges that coaches had, that athletes had, that parents had. And I saw a lot of kids getting hurt, but more importantly, I saw a lot of kids quitting or just kind of taking their identity in softball into all other areas of their lives. So they're really struggling with confidence. I went through, I don't know how deep you want to go on the backstory, but like my story was, I worked really hard, got a scholarship to my dream school in New York City. When I got there, I thought once I got to college, well, then I would surely, by then I would deserve to be confident. Right. But I, even though I had worked hard and made it happen, that's not what I found to be true. You know, some of my teammates had more money than me as far as scholarships went, and some of them were getting more playing times than me. So I was frustrated as a freshman. Now knowing, looking back, it's clear, like, I was a freshman. I needed to get my feet settled and stuff. But at that time I was frustrated because I felt like I was working harder than other people. I didn't feel like my coach was seeing me. I wasn't confident and I was kind of wearing this mask. So I was stuck between what I call the imposter, feeling like, oh my gosh, maybe this was a mistake. Maybe I didn't deserve to come play here. And on the other side, what I call the rooster, and the rooster is the person who feels kind of entitled. And so I was kind of torn between these two like personalities, these two voices inside me. And I got to that place where it's like, I just want to be like everybody else. And a lot of my teammates were drinking and they were partying. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to go out and party with them, but I'm just going to have some drinks here in the dorms. I know in Canada you can drink when you're 18, but in the States you're not supposed to. But a lot of people do. I did. I hung out with some of the wrong people and I was sexually assaulted in the dorms. That led me down the chain of reaction, like where some things weren't handled the way they maybe could have been by the school, by the police, some different things. I ended up leaving that school. And while my teammates were flying off to kick off their best season ever in Florida and do their whole spring tour, I was flying home. And for me at that time, it was like, it wasn't so much that I lost my scholarship or lost this dream of going to school in New York City and like all the stuff. For me at that time, it was that I lost my identity. And so I went on this kind of internal quest to like figure out, well, if it's not what I do that allows me to deserve to be confident, like I can hit home runs, I can throw strikeouts, I got the scholarship, I did this or I accomplished this. If that's not what makes me deserve to be confident, then what is it? And I thought then, I was like, well, it must be what I have. I'm going to be a millionaire. And I became obsessed with becoming rich and making money. And I started hanging out with these really successful business owners. But even when I hung out with these really successful quote unquote people, I found they were still struggling with the same things I was in college. You know, they still felt this imposter syndrome, like they had to be something that they weren't. They were stressed. They could have or buy or go anything. They could do all these things with money, but they still felt like this kind of rooster imposter tear apart syndrome where they're like still feeling like, well, I have to work so hard, this hustle and grind. So I'm like, man, if it's not what you do, if it's not what you have, what is it? And I got really lucky that some people came into my life, some incredible mentors that I'm still very close with today, that introduced me to this community of people that were doing meaningful work, that were confident in who they were, that didn't feel like they had to prove themselves, that had a different way of thinking about the world and life and performance. They had a lot of opportunity, but more importantly, they were confident, not because of what they did or because of what they had, but because of who they are. And so I was like, man, if I could have learned this stuff that I know now about relationships, about how to communicate, about our emotions, about my mind, about my body, if I could have learned that stuff when I was much younger, my life could have looked a lot different. I could have experienced a lot less pain and been in a much different place with my relationships and my career and my health than I was from the majority of my 20s. So I was like, man, I got to get this message out to kids. So I started going on tour, I started speaking. And from that, people were like, hey, can you help my kids more? So we started working with athletes kind of privately and in small groups and just had incredible results. We've had girls that started out in one place and then become published authors, other girls that build better relationships with their parents. Some kids that have gone on and use our tools to be able to find the scholarships at the schools that were right for them. So it's really been a really cool journey over the last 10 years, mostly in my own personal evolution of understanding this, because I'm finally, you know, 10 years later, I'm in the place where I really have a deep understanding, not just because I'm saying what I've heard from somebody else, but because I've truly lived it at this point. And because I've lived it, I can have a conversation with pretty much anyone at any point in their journey and have a deep understanding of where they're at and connect with them and open up doors for them for their next steps, which is just, it's really fulfilling to be able to say, even though all the stuff I've been through has been really difficult, I'd never go back on wish any of it again. I'm grateful for it because I've learned so much and I've become unbreakable, unshakable, and I'm able to give that gift to a lot of people now.
Yeah, it is truly a gift. I mean, the realness, I guess, for lack of a better word, the way you come across is evident through your path, through the journey that you went through. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not wishing the early on anybody, but we all have to kind of go through some pretty serious adversity in life before we realize, hey, we really got to go this way or we got to change. It's, you know, I worked with an executive coach and one of the things that she was kept hammering me on is you're a recovering perfectionist. And that was ingrained in me from the work life, you know, working for the big corporations and representing a lot of corporations. And I always was like, where are you going with that? And she goes, you're going to make mistakes and life is not going to be perfect. And the people you deal with are not going to be perfect, So the sooner you come to terms with that, the sooner that you're going to be better off. And it took me a while, because old school and kind of morphing into newer school. But the best word of advice she ever gave me says, why don't you run your business the way you coach your teams? Because she could always tell the passion I had from sport. And once I started doing that, it was a complete evolution for me. And I now have had, the last 3 years, just what we're doing, I had about 17 co-op students work with me, and every single one of them at the end of it goes, wow, that was just amazing. No one's ever done anything like this. No one's mentored me like this, and so on and so on. So that's my way of giving back. But the other side of the coin is they're helping me immensely on the technical side, because I'm, you know, still trying to adapt to all that. So kudos to you for doing that and where you're at now. So what then is the next phase? And so it was going into where you're going after where you've been.
Yeah, so that's the beginning of the story. There's actually several different milestones in between there that are amazing. Where I am at now, I actually just last week was brought on as COO with my original business mentor for a new mission that well, he's been working on it for a while, but basically we're just taking it to the next level. It's called Coach Blueprint Academy. So it's not just youth coaches. Actually, I will now be working with coaches in the tops of all industries. So we've got roofer coaches, real estate brokers, people that want to coach other people on how to be successful. So at the core, what we do is we help people become successful. And what that, we can talk about what that means, but, and then surround themselves with other people who are successful. So the same help me get out of my pit of despair, or my abyss, whatever you want to call it, and help me be able to live a life that I feel like is meaningful and full of growth and love and all the things that I'm enjoying in my life now. It was really at the core, it was a community that I surrounded myself with. So basically we are now, we find people that are ready to, or are already leading communities, and we give them the tools to be more successful in that and to be able to find that balance in their lives. Part of that, part of the communities that I am very involved with will always be and are still the youth sports, mental performance, mental wellness spaces. So I have a lot of partners right now, people that are doing incredible things in the youth sports arena. David Klein with America Offline, who's really in the mental wellness for kids with technology. Stacey Mahoy, who's doing amazing things for sports parents. I've got Paige Tons. She's taking over. We're in the process of transferring Fast Pitch Fit over to her because she's doing the mental performance training for softball athletes. I've got new partners in the baseball world. I've got great friends in the hockey world. So basically, all the things that I've learned and the connections I've made, we're just pouring gasoline on the fire of people who are doing good things in the world. And it's really fun. So I've kind of got my hands in a lot of different pools, if you will. we've got a really amazing system that works. And most importantly, like I said, just this incredible community that I learn so much from every single day. And we're having a lot of fun, things I love with people I love. So that's where I'm at now.
Yeah, the cliche, you know, when you love what you do, you never work another day in your life. And that path has kind of evolved for me as well. It took many years for me to come around full circle to actually use my degree. Now I am. But loving what you do is really important. So maybe explain a little further of the actual, I guess, the leadership model that you're evolving to, helping coach. Is it helping coaches coach better, or is it helping them?
Let me speak to that a little bit. So this last year, we started a new program called Fit to Lead. And basically, what I learned was, because I was coaching softball teams, organizations here in the local area. I had done lessons. I did my online mentoring. And I still have a few clients I work with that are teens. But what I learned about 2 years ago was, like I said at the beginning of this call, was it didn't matter what I said. It didn't matter how good my intentions were. If I'm not living it, I'm going to reach a plateau that I cannot bust past. And I'm sure you've either experienced it or seen it in your own life. Like you said at the beginning, it's like, well, we don't make time for ourselves. It doesn't matter. And I got to the point for me where I was like, I would never want any kid to live the life that I'm living right now. Right. It, for me, there was this chain reaction that started in college with some difficult things that happened that I shared. There's a chain reaction in that, and how I viewed relationships and how I viewed my own worth. And it led into some very unhealthy relationships in my life. And I was very confused in that. And I don't know how much you know about emotional abuse, toxic relationships, gaslighting, those kinds of things. My life behind the scenes, behind the Facebook videos and stuff was very confusing to me. And I didn't really understand what was going on. I just know that I wasn't happy. And I know I was working really, really hard. And I was really confused about why the people that I love so much in my life, like why I couldn't make them happy, basically, right? And so I did a lot of counseling, a lot of therapy, trying to figure out like, what do I need to do? What do I need to fix about myself, right? Trying to do this. And it took a long time for me to realize that ultimately, like, I needed to have boundaries, and I needed to say like, hey, this is what I need in my life, and to be able to be okay with that. And so I had to make some big changes. In the process of that, I also needed to get my body healthy. I needed to, basically, I took a year almost completely off where I only worked like maybe, you know, a couple hours a day. I made more money that year than I had in the last probably 10 years combined, working a couple hours a day. And I focused on drinking water, getting good sleep, reading books, right? And I just focused on myself for the first, because what I realized was if I didn't set a strong foundation for my life, right? My health, my energy, my wellness, if that wasn't sturdy and strong, anything else I built as far as in coaching, anything else I built in business, anything else I tried to do would crumble. And I've seen this for many of my coaching friends that they're so driven and determined, like, I want to be this amazing Division I coach, or I want to be this high school coach, or I want to be, you know, run this organization, and their families fall apart, or their health takes a backseat, and they end up all kinds of health issues. They end up drained, then they end up bitter, and they're not having fun anymore. And if they're not having fun, the kids aren't having fun. And you see all the stress and tension, like when you go places, because there's all this like, I've got to push forward, I got to press forward, right? So I went through this journey myself, and then I realized like there's so many other people that are such givers and helpers, especially in the community that we operate in, that are coaches, and we give, thinking like, if I give enough, then maybe I'll get something in return. If I help enough people, maybe I'll help myself, because there's that belief out there. Yeah. And so we created this program called Fit to Lead that was really about helping those coaches, those leaders, whether they're sports parents or people who want to lead local organizations. Like, we've got one guy out right now from the West Coast, and he's got this vision of creating a multi-sport community, right? And he wants to do this, but he's shy, right? And he's scared to like put his message out there. And we've got a mom, a single mom of three kids, and she was having struggles because she's got a vision that she wants to really support other single moms and help them have breakthroughs and help children that are dealing with depression and anxiety. But in her own life, like, she just felt like she couldn't get her head above water. So we created a system to help people that want to have a big impact on the world, basically get their own stuff in order first, right? How do they have a big impact on themselves and allow their message to come through the life that they live instead of preaching it? Because I did that, my team has done that, and because of that, that's why we're able to show up powerfully and feel real, because it is real because we've done it. And we've just seen that people are craving that authentic connection. People are craving saying like, hey, yeah, sometimes it's hard, sometimes it's rough, sometimes it's tough. And when you show up in this way and you learn these core principles, you can be your message, you can live your message instead of just preach it. So that's what I've been really excited about, because the people who have gone through that program, like, their lives are just changing so fast, and they're growing so fast. And whether it's they're getting healthy, it's all different things. Some of them are getting more healthy. But the thing that I hear from all of them is like, they just feel a new sense of energy and control over their life, where before they felt like they were like on that cycle and they like, you know, I'm never going to get there. And if we feel like we're never going to get there, then that carries over into our kids too, and then they get burnt out.
Yeah, and it's the ever vicious circle, right? If you get mm-hmm. caught in that spiral and you don't break it off, we all been there. I mean, there are times, especially this time of the year, where I go, I think I just came off 27 days in a row, and I was like, whoa, and
that's a lot.
I gotta go do some stuff. I went to the driving range for the first time in a week.
Good for you. You
know, I was like, come on, man. It's like, but it was all because I'm doing all this stuff for other people to help them get better. And I love it. I absolutely love it. Not much like the work you're doing. Mm-hmm. Go back a little bit to the working with girls in particular, because being a former softball player, then working with them directly, one of the big asks I get all the time, because I also coach softball, so I've worked with girls, big differences of coaching girls versus boys. Do you agree?
Not really.
No? You think you treat them the same?
There's a few minor differences. There's a few minor differences in maturity level and how you communicate at different places. Yeah. In general, like if you look at the history of how boys find their spot in society, they compete where girls work together. So there's some differences there. Yeah. However, I think that they're greatly exacerbated by the way that most coaches were coached. So because most male coaches were coached by what we call hard ass homers, you got it right. Because a lot of adult coaches, and by the way, there's women who I've seen that are coaches, high level coaches even, that still coach the same way, because a lot of us coach in a personality style, how we were coached. A lot of us do, not everyone. We either coach that way or we coach the opposite, right? One or the other. So I find that, you know, I was really nervous. The last few years, I started working with more boys and boys teams. We have a boys program now. I'll give you an example. So I went out to a varsity high school baseball team, and I was going to teach them my Zen hitting program, which is basically how do you get in the zone and be more confident in the box? Because, you know, there's people who have great technical skill, but just because they have technical skill doesn't mean it works in the game, right? And they can have horrible technical skill and they crush it in the game. You're like, why? I don't know if this makes sense. So I basically was teaching them how to get in flow or get in the zone. And I was scared to death to go teach this boys team. I'm like, they're going to be like, what's a girl teaching me to do about hitting? Like, that's just not something you see very often, right? So I was scared, and I was like, I had to get my mind right. I was like, okay, like, I'm not going to teach them anything they don't know, right? But I am going to go in there and I'm going to show them some cool technology. I'm going to ask them some questions. So I use technology as a hook to be able to get them. And once I showed them that, they were like all in. They wanted to know everything that I had to say. When I have personal one-on-one conversations with boys, when I mentor them in the mental performance space, they express and they speak and they communicate very similarly to how the girls do. My approach may be a little bit different, just because I'm a female. But in general, in getting them to perform at higher and higher levels, the process is more similar from boys to girls than it is from this girl to that girl. Right? like every personality of every kid is different. They all have their own situations. They've got their ways they view the world. They have their parenting. They have their fears, right? So I think it's more about child to child than it is about genders, in my personal experience.
And I agree with you for the most part. There are some differences in terms of growth and maturity. That was mm-hmm. one of the things I noticed. Like, for example, I had, I was coaching a 8-year-old hockey team boys. Mm-hmm. And I had an opportunity to go to a girls' jamboree for a weekend, and there were 8-year-old girls. The girls were about 6 inches taller. And the thing that just got me was, because I had these 8-year-old boys, they were still doing snow angels and goofing off and doing all that stuff. When I called the girls to the board to explain a drill, they all came in, they went to a knee, and it was like totally different. But years later, the girls were very similar to the boys. It was the approach, but the social element, I think, was the big difference.
The social element is huge. And yeah. Like you said, maturity, like they're going to develop a little bit faster at younger ages in general. The girls are, that's a generalization, but in general, when you get a team together, I wouldn't go back and coach 10 and under boy baseball. Let me say that.
Yeah. The maturation's quite not there yet, but as they get older. So it was kind of a shift in terms of my mindset. And then when I mainly focused with boys later, I kind of went, okay, there are the differences in the competition, what have you, but treating them as individuals is what I've always told everybody. Mm-hmm. That's the key to coaching. If you don't understand what makes your players tick, you're going to really struggle taking to places that you want to take them to. That is something I've learned.
Well, let me ask you too, like when you say take them to places that you want to take them to, what does that mean to you?
That you as a, they, well, when I say I want to take them, it's the mutual goals at the beginning of the season we come up with, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's not something that I believe coaching is no longer about, back in the day was about dictating, you know, coaches were saying, mm-hmm. you know, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do it my way or the highway, et cetera, et cetera. Now it's shifted to, you know, you're facilitating their journey. You're facilitating their experience. And if you're doing it right, it's a positive one. Mm-hmm. but many coaches still to this day, it's amazing. How many are you doing goal setting with your players? Very few hands go up, especially the grassroots level. Maybe when you get up the higher pipeline. And to me, that's paramount. If you're not goal setting with teams at the right from the get-go, where are they going to go? Like, it's not their goals, then it's your goals, right? So kind of shifting that backwards, and that's kind of where I'm going with it, is defining it, not say mine, but the team's goals as a whole. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, yeah. And that's why I was asking, because I feel like the language that I heard, which is why I asked the question, was get them to where you want to go, right?
Yeah.
Which a lot of people might hear that and they're like, yeah, get them to where I want to go, or what I see is what they're capable of. And parents do the same thing. Well, I know what they're capable of, right? And in general, coaching kids is the same that I coach executives and coach business owners. It's the same process. It's a facilitation, right? It's you hold the space and you hold the vision, and you ask them questions, you reflect back, but ultimately you pull out of them. Now, last year I invested in myself at a higher level than I'd ever invested in myself, because, and I didn't know this when I first started, I knew this after six or to a year later, I hired this coach to coach me because I wanted somebody to believe in me. And I wanted not just somebody to believe in me, but I wanted somebody who I saw as like, this person is doing it. This person's crushing it. They're living the life that I want. They've made it happen. They've started from this beginnings, and this is where they're at now, and they're living it. And I was like, I want this person to say, Jen, you got it. Like, you're it. You got the thing it takes, right? And I wanted that, and I craved it so bad. Just like many of the kids I coach want that validation from their coaches, right? And throughout the process, I got frustrated because I was like, I was trying so hard to get that approval and that validation as an adult from this coach. I know he liked me. Like, I know he thought I was a good student and stuff, but I never got the validation from him. But what he did was he got me to the place where I didn't need it anymore, where I had enough confidence in myself that it didn't matter what he thought anymore. And it's brilliant. And it's so, and it's like, oh, this is what I try to do for my kids. And now I get it, you know, like, and so back to what you were saying about working with the individual kids, that's the process we worked with them through in MVP. Was we had this program called Impact Program, which is really about getting the kids to say like, hey, here's where I'm at. Here's where I want to be. And giving them a GPS or a roadmap, so that way they're not dependent on us to guide them on every single step of the way. But basically, it's like giving a kid a GPS and teaching them how to use it, right? And so giving them the tools so they feel confident knowing how to navigate themselves. So whenever they're in a situation where maybe, like I was, like I didn't have, for a period of my life, I didn't have people around me that were like, hey, like this is your next step. And I had to figure it out myself. And it was really difficult. And had I had the tools that I have now, I could have gotten out of those situations a lot quicker. So at the core, I think whether you're coaching an individual athlete or coaching a team of athletes, it really is about helping them be able to feel safe, communicating what they want most, what they're feeling. So that way when they can express that and they're in that safe environment to express that, you can best guide them. Because if they don't feel safe expressing what's real for them and they're giving you the right answers that they think you want to hear, it's like saying, hey, I'm in Texas and I want to go to I want to go to Disney World, right? Texas to Disney World, you would drive east. But if they're not really in Texas and they're really in New York City, right? And they're lying, and you think they're in Texas, but they're really in New York City, and you tell them to drive east, they end up in the middle of the ocean, they end up sunk. So it's about creating that safe environment for them to say, hey, here's where I really am, and for them not to feel ashamed of that, and say like, here's what I'm dealing with in my life, here's what I'm feeling, here's what I'm going through, here's where I want to go, and then for you to help them be able to facilitate that journey.
And one of the big evolutions, I guess, in coaching the last probably 20 years is the fact that we're actually talking about feelings. You know, gone are I wouldn't say gone are the days. I mean, but even at the professional level, you hear coaches talk about the importance. And also, when I ask, and I'll ask you the question, top three characteristics, great coaches, what would you say they are?
That's a good question. I actually did this exercise recently, so I'm not going to try to not remember what I said, but instead just answer it right now for me on the spot. Top three characteristics in a coach. Someone who really listens, because of some stuff that I was having a conversation with my coaches today, I would say somebody that doesn't project their own experience, but is present with yours. Because I think as a coach, it's really hard when you see somebody going through something, it's really hard not to just give advice based on your experience, right? We want to tell people like, here's what I would do, right? But if that's what you would do, Glenn, it doesn't mean it's right for me, right? So someone who listens well and holds the space so that way it's a person to get it out. So it doesn't project. Instead of projecting, they reflect. So they say, hey, here's what you're sharing with me. Here's what I'm seeing. Here's what you're expressing. So that person then can become self-aware. So you create self-awareness. And then someone who is constantly in their own journey of growth, because I feel like if you're going to, in order to be a good coach, you have to be going through it. You've got to be living it in some capacity or another. That's where you're going to be able to get the insights in order to give it back. Because if you're stagnant and you're not growing as a coach, physically, emotionally, spiritually, in your relationships, in your career, it doesn't really matter in all aspects. You're going to stunt the growth of the people that you're trying to lead.
I couldn't agree with you more, especially with the evolution and the ongoing learning. That's probably one of my biggest frustration. Many grassroots coaches I interact with feel that once they've taken that their initial clinic, like whatever coaching certification, and Canada is a little different than the US because we actually have the National Coaching Certification Program. So coaches all do get certified regardless mm-hmm. of the sport, various levels. But then they take the clinic and they do all their initial certification, and 2-3 years down the road, they're not continuing to learn. They're not reading books. They're not going, and I'm going to these workshops and I'm like, why isn't there nobody here? Well, mm-hmm. it's not mandatory. So mm-hmm. how do we transform their thought process to understanding continual growth is important for you to take your kids to the next level? And mm-hmm. that's really the big conundrum we all face. How do you address that one?
Well, I would first say that there's a lot of different ways to grow. Right. And I think that some of us, and this has been me in the past, and I've had people on my team that might think, well, the only way to grow is to read books or to go to events. And I can say for me personally, my biggest personal development in the last year has been me showing up to train, me doing jiu-jitsu. Like, I've learned so much from going to jiu-jitsu about coaching because I'm intentional about it, because I'm asking the questions, because I'm reflecting. Oh, I didn't realize my coach told me this. And then I went to this other coach and said, well, my coach told me to do it this way. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is what the kids do. Like, and I heard it come out of my voice. Like, and I can so relate to where the kids come from because I was living it. Right. So I think the first thing is for everybody to reflect on, well, how are you already growing? In what area are you already growing? It, to become just more aware. Maybe it's in as a parent and you're learning from there, because I think there's lots of different ways in which we can grow and we can learn lessons that are valuable outside of just going to workshops and events, which I'm a huge proponent of. I go to events all the time. My life changes at events. Came back from an event last week. I'm going to another one next week, right? I think that's that for me, that's like the epitome. And for those people who maybe are like, well, how do I get started? The first step would be just be intentional about the opportunities you already have to grow in your relationships, to grow in your ability to communicate. And then, I mean, growing feels good. I don't think it's something we have to convince people of. Like, I really don't. I don't think anybody who's listening to this, they're listening to this. So, yeah. So I don't need to convince anybody here to change their thought process because they're here. So the best thing then is for the people who are here is how can you lead the way for the others who aren't? Understand them. Understand like what's getting in the way of them growing. Maybe it's that they feel like they can't get away because they're not spending enough time with their spouse. And there's like a lot of times with coaches specifically, like there's a tension there in the marriage because coach has always gone away and doing stuff and they feel like they can't. Maybe it's financial, right? Maybe it's whatever the thought process is. Maybe it is they do think they know everything. I think for them in general, it's not. I think it more might be just like they don't know what they don't know. And so sometimes it's as easy as an invitation to say like, hey, I'm going to this thing. It's going to be really awesome. It's going to be really fun. Would you like to go with me? Invite the spouse to come with them. Know that there's messages that can relate to their marriage or to parenting, to invite the family into the dynamic is really important. And then I think to create opportunities as leaders, right? For people like us, And for the people who are listening, who are facilitators of training, which I think is probably a lot of people who are listening, whether you're currently doing that or you dream of doing that, is looking for ways that you can integrate personal development into the things you're already doing. So whether that's practice, I know a lot of coaches are like, well, I don't know how to communicate with the team. Like, you can you can use social media just for your team in a way to give them personal development and personal growth, to start infusing that into the culture of your organization. Whether you're an official, and you, I was in an officials organization at one point called Impact Officials. My mentor as an umpire, Oscar Ross, one of my favorite people to this day, he was my umpire when I was 12 years old. When I turned 15, he taught me how to be an umpire. I talked to him on the phone last month, and he's one of my favorite people in the world. And he's developed personal development into official, like into his culture of being an official. So I think I don't know if I'm really answering your question, Glenn, but I think we don't have to convince anybody who's here, but what we can do is empower the people who are here to create a bridge for those that maybe just don't know what they don't know.
Kind of planting a seed with the others, because that's one of my challenges when we do talks, regardless if it's parents or officials or coaches. You're already preaching to the choir. They're drinking the Kool-Aid already. People that are listening and sign up for these events, you're nailing it on the head. So it's getting that other, 80%. And I think part of it is the time commitment, the financial commitment. Going to a conference in Canada, there's a couple of big ones. They're like $500 for the registration fee. Then you've got travel. What grassroots coach has $2,000 sitting in a bank account to just spend 3 days at a conference? Mm-hmm. Not many. So that, I think, is one of the challenges. But that's the whole reason why I do these events is to make it cost effective. Bring people like yourself, share your words of wisdom for like an hour, where they couldn't get that if they didn't see this online, right?
Right, right. And I think it comes down to like the cool thing is you can kind of co-op. You can bring together funds to make those things happen, right? If you plan ahead and say, hey, this is one of our core values in our organization or our association, our association is what they call it in Canada, that you build those funds up ahead of time at the beginning of season, so that way it is in the account. It's no big deal for every kid to throw in an extra 10, 20 bucks, 50 bucks to go towards that for the development, as long as you have a system for passing that along and the parents feel the value, right? And I think a lot of coaches, they say, like, parents aren't interested in stuff. They don't want it. That's not true. Parents crave this stuff. They just don't realize how accessible it could be, because in general, there's a breakdown in the flow of communication. And so, I've had amazing, incredible coaches that are at a very high level. And I've asked them, I'm like, these are people who are major influencers in the space. A lot of people listen to them. And I'll say, hey, I'm a coach. I coach this 14 and under team. And I only have so much time with them. What is your opinion on how much time I spend investing in the parent culture versus the kid culture? And the response from this influencer was, don't spend any time on the parents. Zero. Don't. You can't change them anyway, right? Which was interesting. I didn't expect that response, actually. And it's not that I don't disagree, not that I disagree with her belief that you can't change it, but I think that there are parents that are hungry. They want to do the best job they can at parents. They want their kids to be confident. They're frustrated with, what's going on in the society, and they want their kid to be happy and healthy and successful, and they want all these things. And when you give them an avenue in which they can learn that and they can start to see the results, they crave it. So it's about educating them in a way that, hey, this is part of the package that we bring. And most importantly, doing it in a language, how we communicate them to, they're like, yeah, that's what I want. Because if I'm kind of preaching like, oh, we're going to teach life lessons, da, 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 like that doesn't mean anything to them. But if you say like, hey, what we're going to do is we're going to implement a program so where that way after this tournament's over, your kid, by the time the season is over, your kid knows how to come and they're going to be able to spend time with you and connect with you and share with you their feelings. So that way, when they're going through something difficult, that you're going to be the first one that they come to, or whatever it is that the parent wants in your association, to be able to communicate it in a language that they understand instead of preaching like this very heady kind of verbiage that so many of us in the space use. So does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense, because I'm a big believer in parent education, have been for years. I've been very fortunate because of my proactive approach and communicating and sharing. I haven't really had to deal with parents. And that's the number one ask I get from coaches. How do I deal with parents? And like, well, how are you communicating with them? What are you doing to bring them and buy in and support you and support the kids and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So interesting, this year I'm going to do a bunch of parent workshops for a hockey association. And I one of the exercises we do is we ask them, what are your expectations for your son or daughter in new sports? What do you want? Mm-hmm. They'll give me main answers is they want them to have fun, to develop friendships, character skills. So it could be various leadership, communication, respect, and what have you. And those are like the top three over and over and over again. And several hundred parents have asked that question just with this association. Never have they said, you know, I want my kid to play professionally or NCAA scholarship, which is the other challenge that we all face, that they're chasing the dream, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
The girls that you worked with, I know a lot of them aspire to get to NCAA to hopefully get those scholarships. But is that whole reality of, you know, what's achievable versus not. And the big driver is if the kid doesn't want to get there, doesn't matter what the parents do,
right.
They're not going there. They don't have the grit, the determination, the commitment, that love for the passion for the sport and all that kind of stuff. They're never going to reach that level. So,
or they do and they're miserable. Like I've seen them get there because they felt like they had to prove it and to make their parents happy.
Yeah.
And they're just miserable and they're depressed and they question everything. And it's not a healthy place to be.
No. And so how important that is for parents to really understand the motivations of their kids. If they want to get there, support them. If they want to just be with their friends, support them. What are some tips for parents on that front?
Well, okay. So I'm going to speak from the coaching, through the coaching lens for the parent, because then anybody can take something out of this. Like, I think again, the parents who are here, they already get that, right? They already understand, like, yeah, I want my kid to be self-motivated, I don't want to push them to do anything. I think for a lot of parents, it's so hard, even if they come from that place, even if they're well-intended, it is still incredibly hard when they're surrounded by a community of people that verbally express different values. Because I've had great parents in my program that they buy into that belief, and yet when their kid's out there struggling on the pitching mound, and they've traveled all over the country, and they've invested in all of this training, and these parents are in the stands like, oh my gosh, she's struggling. And they think that they're going to spend all they're judging them for how much money they spend to travel over the country, right? So there's this fear of judgment of their kid, and also fear of judgment of them as a parent. I think a lot of parents, they feel like their value and their worth and their how good they are as a parent is reflected on how good their kid is at the sport, which has nothing to do with it. And even if you intellectually understand and know this, when you're surrounded by people that reflect something different, it's really hard, right? So my belief is that coaches, you're not just coaching kids. You are coaching a community. You're coaching the parents in your community. You're coaching the other coaches that you compete against. Often I was coaching other coaches, not just like to teach them like through what I say to them, but by being successful and showing them the relationship that I have with my kids, right? And how there was a better way to do it than how they were doing it. And to be supportive of other coaches and to be supportive of our competition and to build relationships with our competition, with those coaches, and to have positive relationships there, to have positive relationships with the officials, to have positive relationships with the people who set up the facilities and all that kind of stuff. So as a coach, when you go in, it's not just dealing with the parents. The parents are part of your team. And they're playing with you as much as the kids are, not for you, but with you. And so as a coach, if you can really take that on and say, look, I'm going to live my message as best as I can and know that I'm not perfect. Like you said, like I'm going to mess up and I'm going to be open and vulnerable about those things and basically demonstrate how every day I'm working to get better. And I'm going to listen, right? And I'm going to reflect back what people are sharing and I'm going to commit to ongoing growth and sharing that growth with others. Like that's all you can do. That's all you need to do. And that's good enough. And more people what will happen over time is as every single person who listens to this, who takes this on, that decides, I'm going to start living my message. It's like if there's 100 people on this side and one person on this side, it's really hard for this one person to battle against a different mindset. But as soon as one person gets one person, then there's two and two get four. You start to shift the gravity to this other kind of culture. It becomes much easier for people just to relax and enjoy. So you don't have to do anything. You don't have to try anything. You don't have to do anything more. Just keep showing up. If you just keep showing up and living the message, like the culture's already shifting. Like you said, we're talking about emotions. We're talking about feelings. We're talking about things that we haven't. It's there was an overcorrection in the space. Like, you don't have to do anything. Just enjoy.
Yeah. And the big thing with the parental challenges is that peer pressure, right?
Yeah. It was just like kids.
My kid is playing, you know, triple A, super elite, blah, blah, all those words that no one should be saying with a 6-year-old.
Right.
Like, right. It kills me that those words are even be like, it shouldn't be happening till the Olympics as far as I'm concerned. But that said, if my son has got a buddy that's playing on one of these teams, well, I want to try to support him, get on those teams and so on. Then all of a sudden, the 13, 14 years old, the kids are burning out. They're frustrated. They've worked a sport. They don't love it anymore. Coaches are taking it way too serious. I just saw I actually interviewed a group for this event, and they contributed to an article that was all about winning at all costs and the pressure that coaches in Ontario are under to do so. Like, mm-hmm. The best of intentions, they want to do all the right things, all the great stuff that coaches do. But then as they get into the season, they go, whoa, the only way we got to win to be able to success, and they measure success. And that's where I kind of want to go, your measurement of success with your kids. What does that look like for you and or success in general, like your parent group and what have you?
Yeah, that's a good conversation. I won't give a quick answer to it. We can go back and forth on it. But you said something that you said the pressure to succeed at all costs. Yeah. And I wanted to add on to that first, and we'll come back to the success thing, because it is hard when you are a force for good, is what I call it. When you're one of those coaches that's doing all the right things, or at least you feel like you are, and you're really building the relationship with your kids and you see their confidence growing, and then you start losing. And it's like, how can I make a difference in the world? How can I make a difference in the culture and the community when people only value the wins? And yet I'm not taking shortcuts. I'm not picking up kids to do it. I'm not burning them out. Like, I'm like, it's hard, right? Especially in the beginning, because it takes a little time for the culture to keep up, to catch up to the results. They do catch up, mm-hmm. right? It does work. It just takes a little time. So I just wanted to reflect back that I get it. It's hard. Right. It's frustrating at times.
Yeah, it's tough. To get through that storming period, you know, you form mm-hmm. teams, getting through the storming, and that's where you have to reiterate the importance of patience and repetition, because if you do all the right things, it will come, you know, mm-hmm. and focusing strictly on winning is not really the objective, but the winning is a byproduct if you're doing all the right things. It may take a while in the season, but having that patience, and because we're so fixated with the costs, like when you're talking thousands upon thousands of dollars now for kids to play a sport, it's no mm-hmm. wonder that parents are like, hey, I want a return on my investment. I want to see that happen like now.
Right. Because they're measuring return on investment as far as dollars and cents, yeah. instead of looking at what I'm not paying thousands of dollars for my kid to play a sport. That's not what I'm paying thousands of dollars for. And if you ask enough parents, they'll tell you, like, I'm paying thousands of dollars because it's something we do together as a family, because we get to go on vacations together, because we're making friends, because we're having an active, healthy lifestyle. If I wasn't spending $1,000 here, I'd be spending $1,000 somewhere else, right? Like, yeah. Like that. But when we minimize it, or we shorten it to, I'm paying $1,000 for my kid to go to this tournament, right? For this sport. We're taken away from what it really is, which is like life, memories, friends, health, relationships, learning how to fail, learning about pressure, learning how to be resourceful enough to come up with the money in the first place, right? There's so many other things that come with that, that it's not, it can't just be boiled down to that. So back to your question was...
Yeah, I'm going to go back to what you just touched.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. Take it.
Learning to fail kind of ties in with the success component. What's your take on making youth sports a safe to fail environment again? Because one of the biggest challenges we're facing is the criticism they're getting from the parents, from the coaches, which is pushing them out of sport in mm-hmm. lieu of encouraging them. And a lot of people think I'm insane when I say this, to make as many mistakes as feasibly possible, because it's going to help you develop and be creative.
I think it's interesting that people tell you that you're crazy for that.
Well, because they don't want to see mistakes. And one of the biggest challenges we're facing is this, especially to get to the higher levels, the kids or young adults by that point are so structured because of the systems and the tactics and strategies that youth coaches are using.
Yeah.
They're not creative. They're not loving the game. They're not playing for, you know, with that joie de vivre, that they just love the game and they're creative and they're, somebody said to me yesterday, I was running a workshop, and when he asked his son, he said, why do you play hockey? He goes, because when I'm out on the ice, I'm free.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, Oh, I love that analogy. And that was from a 12-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm.
And the father couldn't really understand it. I said, it's because maybe you didn't play the game when you're out there. He didn't grow up playing hockey. But the other side of the coin is, when you love that sport, when it's coming from inside, you are free. It's like nobody's around. And when you get the puck on your stick, you're definitely free because you have that cherry time, right? So I could relate to it all too well because of all the different sports I played. So how do we instill that and then come to the success equation?
Yeah, I think what the kid is talking about, he's talking about being in the zone. He's talking about flow. He's talking about his mind being quiet, which in today's digital world,
yeah,
we don't get none of. I went to this digital retreat last weekend, digital wellness retreat with my friend David, who's doing this for kids because he was a baseball coach. He saw the kids not being creative, like exactly like you said. A kid would hit a home run and everybody would just stand there, not even be excited, right? And it was interesting. We were playing while we were out there. We were designing these interactive activities for kids and stuff, and we did this. We did a little yoga guided visualization towards the end, and then when we were finished with that, we kind of all opened our eyes, and there was one of my friends standing there that I had just made, and he had a soccer ball in front of him, and I just went, and he kicked me the ball. And before you knew it, we were all like, we hadn't said anything. No words were exchanged, but there was this full out like soccer pass game going on. No goals, just like passing the soccer ball back and forth between a bunch of us. And it was just like free play, right?
Yeah.
And I know for me in jiu-jitsu, just like me, whenever I was playing softball, like when you're there and you're present in that moment, it's like you're just you, like there's no external noise and stuff. So that's probably what that kid was describing. So when you're in that space of just play, of just freedom, there is no fear of failure because you're just doing it, right? Like it doesn't actually exist in that space, in that moment, in that space, because you're just in flow, right? That freedom. Targets are important. Shooting the goal in the basketball, having something to shoot for is important because without it, you just bounce it back and forth and you never have any kind of boundary to like improve, right? So having a target of winning or of whatever playing successfully looks like for you,
mm-hmm.
you know, like I was talking to James Leith the other day and he was talking about this young football team that he had. And he asked every kid, what does it look like to never fail or to play well? Because they were in a higher age group and they realistically the entire team was smaller, not as experienced, like they probably weren't going to win a single game all season. And then one of the girls says, hey, like coach, are we going to win at all ever? And he said it was one girl and the rest were boys on the team, and he says probably not, no, I don't, no, you're not. And he said, so we get a choice, we can either just go out there and accept that or we can get better. And he said, what does playing well look like for you? So for what the girl, it was like never dropping a snap was what playing well for her looked like. And so that was what success looked like for her. I'm totally going on tangents, so feel free to...
for me, it's about the little wins. You know,
mm-hmm.
One of the teams is probably the most fun I ever had as a coach. I stepped up to coach an Adam team when my son also was playing Adam, but he made the rep team. There was a kid that I made a deal with. His dad passed away in a very similar way that mine did when he was 8 years old. Literally, mm-hmm. The similarities was just unbelievable.
Wow.
He took a year off from hockey, and I thought, you know, I went to him and said, I'll give you the year, but I want you coming back next year and get him back on the horse. And I said, the deal I'll make with you is I'll coach the team.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, okay, I'll come back if you coach. So he comes mm-hmm. back, and he's the top dog on the team. And the rest of the team I ended up with were like all the misfits that no one wanted to coach. And I said, I'll take them all. And didn't even have a goalie. It was just like, you know, we didn't win a lot of games, but I really tried to focus on the importance of values, like our core values and teaching mm-hmm. respect and sportsmanship. Did some crazy things to win some games, like pulling my goalie in the first period when we had an offensive zone face-off and what have you. But the parents were early on were like, oh, man, we're not really winning a lot of games. But we could tell the kids are having fun. And, like, by the end of this season, I think maybe we won 10 games out of 30, so we're about a 300 team. But every single kid came to me and said, I had so much fun, I just love this season. The parents same thing. And it was like, to me, that was a great season, even though it wasn't reflective on the scoreboard, but the kids loved it. They all, every single one of those kids came back the following year, and
yeah,
I think every one of them played right to midget. So that was my goal, is, and I think that's a reflect for me, success as a coach, when all your kids come back the following year with a smile on their face. That to me is what I share with everybody, because if you are not instilling that love and passion in the sport or activity that you're coaching, you probably, there's some things you could work on to finesse that so that they do love it and they do keep playing.
It sounds like it was a very success-filled season, right? So I personally, like, for me, success as a coach, it's not about every single kid coming back the next year, because some of the kids should have never been playing in the first place. They should have gone and done piano, or they should have gone and done something else. For me, it's about helping them become more of who they are, and for them to be more aware of who they already are and how amazing they already are. And so whether that means they come back to the sport that they love because they love it, or because they go do something else because they love it, that's great. The definition I use is success is the constant attainment of an, or progress towards the attainment of an ideal. So the constant progress. So success is not a destination. It's a process, right? And so it's something that we're constantly doing, because if you want to look for something that's perfect, if you look up the perfect in the definition in the dictionary, because I know you said you're a covering perfectionist. I am too. I am too. Like, I'm with you, right? I'm totally over that now. But that was very much a part of my early on. But to be perfect means that something is complete. Well, if you think of complete, well, that means our life is over, our work is over, our career is over. And so if you love what you do, you don't want it to be complete. So it's not about perfect, it's about perfecting. And it's about always constantly improving and getting better. And so you set the target, you work towards the target, you get feedback. Oh, I didn't hit the target. How can I improve and get better? And that's the game. And the game is what's fun, is a constant reflection. And then sometimes you have an injury, or sometimes you have a setback in life, and it's a new, you're at a new starting, but there you have a new game, right? It's not about ending with success. It's about being success, which means always having a vision of the, what's ideal to you, the values, the way you live, the way you feel, right? Having fun, the way, the smiling, joy, connection, right? Having a vision of that, being the best version of yourself, and then constantly just saying, reflecting, okay, what can I do to be more of that this week? What's the one thing I can do to get closer to that this week? And if you do that on a consistent basis, you show up, right? Be real, be raw. You speak up, you share your experience, and you reach up and you ask for support, you can't lose.
And that is such a perfect way to end this conversation. I know we could probably talk for hours, but in respect of your time, I learned a ton on this. I knew going into this, you'd open my eyes for some stuff. I'm going to share one quote that is one of my favorites. Claire Drake, a lot of people like and use the analogy. He's Canada's John Wooden, the greatest coach in probably Canadian history. He's the only coach that I know of, and I think that's why he should be up in the, he should be in the dialogue with the John Woodens, that he won two national championships in the same year, different sports. National championship in football. Wow. And then also in hockey. Like, that's never been done, never will be done by anybody. But he had this one quote that actually is on the desktop of my computer. If you're done learning, you're done. And the greatest coaches of all times, like the John Woodens and Claire and all the Pat Summits and all of them, they were lifelong learners and continued to learn even well after they retired. Like the analogy of John Wooden taking notes at conferences when he was like in his 70s, and people would go, what are you doing? Like, you've already, oh, because I'm
you wrote the book. Yeah.
Yeah. You wrote it. Like, I may learn something. Well, I learned a ton on this chat, and I hope everybody that's watching this learned a ton. So to just kind of, so they can follow the new work and the new path you're going, how do they find you, or how can they follow what you're doing?
Yeah, because I do so many different things. The easiest way to get to connected to me is either send me an email at jen@jenstarkey.com. JennStarkey.com, or follow me on Facebook, Jen Starkey, Be a Force for Good. It's a page. So I capped out on my friends, so I can't add any more friends. But if you follow my fan page or my business page, whatever, on Facebook, that's a great way to stay in touch with all the different things that I'm doing. I can connect you with some of my resources, and just support you with wherever you're at in your journey, if we can.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Jen. This was a blast. I love the chat.
Love it too. Thanks, Glenn. Keep crushing it, bud.
Thanks for joining us this week. You can find us on Facebook for Love of the Game, Twitter, TLOTG Conference, and forlovethegame.ca. We'll see you next week for an all-new episode.